Hello and welcome to another episode of the Leaders Sport Business Podcast, the podcast about leaders in sport from leaders in sport. My name is James Emmett. I'm the editorial director at Leaders. Hello. And with me is the content director at Leaders, my colleague, David Kushnan. How are you, David?
I'm well, thank you, James. Hello.
Yeah, how are you doing, David, over there?
Very good,
thank
you.
You've got steam coming out of your ears.
No. Very good. It's still the Easter holidays here in the UK.
Is it?
So there's a little bit of juggling going on.
We call it the Easter holidays. I believe over in North America, it's often referred to as spring break.
Is that right?
I think that's what the guys in Cancun are saying. Or March Madness, I think, depending on your religious denomination.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, juggling work and parenting a bit over this holiday period, as I know many people are, but otherwise in fine form. How are you?
Yeah, doing good. Thanks, Dave. I've given Easter a miss this year, so I've just worked through lots of calls.
You're off on Friday, weren't you?
Yeah. Yeah, no, good. Enjoy Easter. It's the turning of the seasons. The trees are coming out, aren't they? You know,
Trees.
Yeah, the trees are in leaves.
They're
in leaf.
I don't know if you've been outside. It's blowing an absolute gale here
sure.
in London.
Busy. Lots of things going on at the moment. Lots of calls taking place. Lots of prep. We've got lots of things in the pipeline, not least our big sports, entertainment, media and brands extravaganza coming up in New York. We've been doing lots of work on the program for that. Had an interesting call yesterday with Reddit, who are on the program. They're doing one of these presentations. We've got this funky presentation format at this sports and entertainment event in Force. Doesn't really have a name, the presentation format, but essentially it's a timed 12-minute presentation.
It's on the buzzer.
Is it on the buzzer?
Is it a buzzer beater?
It could be, yeah. Well, we're basically asking very interesting people to tell us very interesting things within the space of 12 minutes. We're demanding audience attention of just 12 minutes.
And specifically, we're asking for four interesting things.
Four things you need, dot, dot, dot. And Reddit are going to talk about communities and the differences in hyper passionate communities within different spaces and sports, entertainment, lifestyle, etc. Should be a fascinating session. Something that that struck me in some of these conversations, we've got Eli from Mitchell & Ness, who we've talked about before on the podcast, talking about commercializing nostalgia. And nostalgia is a topic that runs across the program. And it did get me thinking, I wonder whether we can maybe do a call out for an expert in the kind of human psychology of nostalgia. I mean, we've got retail, commercialization, marketing kind of covered. I'm interested in the physiology, the psychology of how it works. I wonder...
Dr. Nostalgia.
Dr. Nostalgia, are you out there? Or are you a patient of Dr. Nostalgia's and can recommend him to us?
Have you previously been Dr. Nostalgia?
That would be, harking back to that time.
Yeah.
Also, we've got a very exciting Leaders in Focus, our interview show from IMG, recording next week. We've got Barbara Slater, the outgoing director of sport at the BBC, on next week. It's going to be released a little bit further down the line, because I think there is an exciting announcement coming from BBC Sport any day now.
It's a very busy week next week, actually. I was looking at my own diary.
Oh, yeah.
And it's pretty stacked. We have got... we're heading to the embassy, James. We've got a date at the embassy.
Well, some of us might be, David, but others might have a dinner with some commercial directors to do.
Oh,
yeah,
diary, so we'll see. The diary is busy.
Well, let's see if we can do the dinner at the embassy. Let's see. Lots going on next week. We're in the swing of event season. The sun comes out in the UK and people start thinking, let's pop on a frock and get down to an embassy. It's time for an event. And that is what's happening. Should we see what's going on that's maybe slightly more topical in and around the news space?
Let's do that. Why don't you turn this way, I'll turn that way, and together we've got the full 360 covered. This is 180 Seconds of Sports Biz.
Silver Lake has confirmed an agreement to take Ari Emanuel's Endeavor private. The deal values the group at $13 billion and does not include the TKO business unit set up to run the combined WWE and UFC businesses. Silver Lake is already the single largest shareholder in the group with 31% of the shares. The transaction will be financed through a combination of new and reinvested equity from Silver Lake and additional capital from the likes of Mubadala and DFO Management. The deal is expected to close by the end of the first quarter of 2025.
WrestleMania 40 in Philadelphia drew 145,298 fans to Lincoln Financial Field over 2 days this weekend, making it the largest WrestleMania event ever. WWE said the event also set records for social media engagement, merchandise sales, and sponsorship.
There was a breakthrough in women's basketball this week as the South Carolina Iowa NCAA Women's Championship Final, the climax of the Women's March Madness, drew 18.7 million TV viewers. That's double what last year's LSU Iowa game drew, and as Austin Karp writes in SBJ, more than the last five men's NCAA championship games, and more than every NBA Finals game back to the Warriors-Cavaliers Game 5 in 2017.
Elsewhere in women's basketball, the WNBA has signed an extension of its media deal with Amazon. Amazon Prime Video will remain as the exclusive national streaming partner for 21 WNBA games a season, including the Commissioner's Cup Championship game. WNBA has also signed an official wine deal with La Crema. The California brand is part of the Kendall Jackson Winery that has signed a broader deal with the NBA.
Former ESPN sports business reporter Darren Revelle has launched a new media entity devoted to the memorabilia and collectible space. Collect has launched with $4 million from an investment group that includes owners of more than 20 professional teams across the NFL, NBA, NHL, and Premier League. Revelle had previously been involved in Action Network, a similarly niche sports media company set up to cover and capitalize on the betting boom in US sports.
Tottenham Hotspur are actively seeking investment into the club and exploring various opportunities. A note in the club's financial report for 2023, which was published last week, said that the Premier League club requires a significant increase in its equity base. Club chairman Daniel Levy and the Tottenham board are being advised by Rothschild & Co.
Short-form content tech provider Greenfly has closed on a new funding round of $14 million. AdVantage led the funding into Daniel Kirshner's company, with other contributions from Ryan Sports Ventures, Mercato Partners, and MBA Equity. The round saw reinvestments from previous backers such as Verance Capital, Iconica Partners, Alpha Edison, Elysian Park Ventures, as the round exceeded its target. And that was 180 seconds of Sports Biz.
And big congratulations to Dan Kirshner and the team at Greenfly on that funding round. Fun fact, James, about AdVantage, the organisation.
We can't see it was spelled. It's capital A, capital D, and then lowercase Vantage.
Indeed it is. That's actually the Sports Tech Investment Fund that is run by the grandchildren of Adi Dassler, the Adidas guy.
The fund with the three stripes.
Indeed, yeah.
Yes. Well, you don't see many Addies around these days, do you?
You don't.
Name
you
that's don't. Gone out of fashion.
Yeah, it certainly has. Yes, well done to the team. Greenfly. It also interests the NBA equity investing there, the commercial ventures arm of the NBA, which does a lot of actually relatively under the radar work investing and finding and identifying really interesting organizations in sport to support, both at startup level and, in Greenfly's case, an already established industry brand.
Yeah. We've done lots of work with Greenfly at Leaders over the years. Fantastic company to work with. And I think that is the view not just of B2B entities like ours, but also across sport. They're sort of in the vanguard of short-form video workflow optimizers, I guess. They're a tech company, and they probably have a catchier marketing phrase for what they do than that. But I do remember in the early days of Greenfly, they would sort of show us the platforms that they would have to take very quickly using AI content from official broadcasts of sports, and to put it onto a very user-friendly platform that would then distribute it to athletes so that athletes could use their own stuff. And it, that is a practice and a platform that has been copied far and wide now. There isn't a top-level sport. There isn't really any sport where that doesn't happen anymore. So congrats again to Daniel and the Greenfly team.
And it is worth saying that Greenfly are really an example of a success story that probably doesn't get talked about enough. In this announcement, talking about the latest funding round, $14 million, as we were saying, they say that they've onboarded over 40 partners around the world in 2023 alone, 40 new clients. They've also made some significant strategic hires, a new chief financial officer, a new chief revenue officer, plus an MD for the EMEA region. So they're really going great guns, and I guess that's reflected in the sort of the breadth and the size and the stature of the companies that have invested in them.
Mm. Did you see the news? Well, of course you did. I just read it out. There's news about Silver Lake taking Endeavor private, which well, basically Silver Lake are taking Endeavor private. This one's been in the post since October-ish, I think, last year. Where there was some sort of official announcement that that's what they were working on, the team at Silver Lake working to take Endeavor private. Plenty to get stuck into here. Endeavor, obviously that is the group which includes WME, IMG. It's Ari Emanuel's entity that sprung out of essentially being a representation agent in Hollywood, to now this sports entertainment
juggernaut
megalith that has fingers in pretty much every entertainment pie going. Not going to analyze the financials too much, other than in a kind of, you know, ooh, that's a large number kind of way. It looks like it's quite a generous deal for Endeavor stockholders. So This agreement values Endeavor at $13 billion, and it does not include TKO, which is the entity that's been set up to run UFC and WWE. It's traded separately on the markets. So $13 billion, that means that individual shares in Endeavor are going for $27.50. Representing a premium of 55% on the closing price of $17.72, which is what the stock was at when Silver Lake said it was working to take the company private in October. Would recommend the piece that Roger Mitchell put together a few weeks ago. The controversialist Roger Mitchell, based over in Como, put together a fantastic, detailed account of Endeavor's accounts and what he expects the sale price to go for, kind of a generous package, a less generous package, a realistic package. I think this is on the generous end of where he put it, and the accountancy rationale for that. Well worth checking that out. You can find Roger Mitchell on LinkedIn, Twitter, etc. Some amazing points here. It did strike me when this happened, the amount of money cascading through various parts of the group, with certainly various people within the group. Clearly, Ari Emanuel is making a packet out of this. He's the architect of it all, the founder and the CEO of the group. He's going to be CEO of the newly private company as well. His partner, Patrick Weitzel, of course, will also be making a whole heap. But Patrick Weitzel is starting a new, it sounds very much like IMG, the entity that he's starting with separate backing of $250 million from Silver Lake.
Yep, this is $250 million of seed equity, which will be founded, managed, and controlled by Patrick Weitzel, the executive chairman of Endeavor. And it's going to, guess what, be investing in and providing services to companies in the entertainment, media, and sports industries, developing, producing, financing, and exploiting film, television, and digital audio-visual content, talent management, and consulting with other entertainment companies. All of that detailed in one of the SEC filings.
I don't understand
around this
deal. That seems to be, and total speculation here, just seems to be a way to give someone a payday. That sounds like what IMG/WME do anyway. Mark Shapiro, the president of WME, in amongst the detail in the filings, he's had his salary raised to $7 million, doubled to $7 million, a guaranteed bonus of $15 million to come, plus all sorts of potential bonuses when this deal closes. Big old payday for him. I do remember when IMG, when Endeavor, whatever this group was called, went public, and there was a lot of talk about, you know, when the optimum time to do the IPO was and all of that sort of stuff. And the payday for various people at that point was kind of extraordinary. I do remember being with some of the UK-based guys at IMG who I don't think, well, I know, didn't receive the same kind of payday as their US counterparts. Looks to me as if maybe that's happened again when they go private. It's just going private, going public, that seems to be the kind of big finance version of bundling, unbundling in the sports industry. It's just
it's very cyclical.
Here's the new way to make a bit of money, to eke a bit of money out of restructuring. Get you a financier like Egon Durbin, the way that Ari Emanuel has had this long-term partner of his at Silver Lake. I remember when we had Ari Emanuel on stage, actually, at Sports Pro back in 2014, 15, I'm going to say.
About them.
Yeah, and I was struck by the sort of loyalty, dedication, praise, admiration that Ari had for Egon Durbin at that time. He was sort of talking about how he could never be the businessman he was without the brains and money behind him that he had in Egon Durbin. So, yeah, if you want to do anything in business, make sure that you're a sort of CEO and financier partnership.
And Silver Lake, as a company in terms of its approach to sport, actually now pretty established investor in various sports entities around, or sports-related entities around the world. Such an interesting, I think, case study, and the story probably hasn't really been told just yet, but certainly one of the big shapers of the industry now over a good number of years, and seems set to continue to be so into the future.
Mm. Did you watch any of March Madness, David?
I actually watched very little. Mm. It doesn't really make a dent either in my sporting consciousness or in the UK, really, other than the odd sort of social clip here or there. But clearly, a big breakthrough moment, particularly for women's basketball over the past few weeks, actually.
Yeah, and breakout star Caitlin Clark, who the Iowa player, who has been involved in I think three record-breaking broadcast games now with Iowa on this March Madness run. A little bit of extra detail on where these figures, 18.7 million tuning into this game in the US. That makes it the 24th biggest telecast of any sort in the US this year. We mentioned in the news item that it's bigger than every NBA Finals game dating back to Warriors-Cavaliers Finals game in 2017. It is also, Austin Karp has done all of this at SBJ, by the way. It's excellent stuff. It's bigger than the Grammys this year, bigger than the post-Super Bowl show on CBS, bigger than, I like this one, bigger than every Kentucky Derby dating back to 1983.
What happened in 1983?
You don't want to know. And every final round of the Masters dating back to when Tiger Woods won in 2001.
Wow.
Yeah. Intriguing, isn't it?
Caitlin Clark is going to be part of the WNBA draft, which happens on Monday evening. Yeah. And something really interesting is already happening in the WNBA in anticipation of her being drafted first.
Mm-hmm.
And the Indiana Fever are the WNBA team that has the first pick in that draft. All the signs are, I mean, they'd be absolutely crazy not to pick her, right? But already this is, we're talking 6 days before the draft takes place. Other WNBA teams, including the Las Vegas Aces, have moved their scheduled games against Indiana Fever to bigger venues, anticipating maybe jumping the gun,
Clark
but certainly
fever.
Anticipating Clark Fever,
literally.
So that's the kind of thing that can come back and bite you if something, you know, doesn't happen in the way that you really strongly suspect it might.
In for a penny, in for a pound, David. You've got to speculate to accumulate.
Well, that's true. That's true. But we have seen examples in Major League Soccer of teams playing into Miami, anticipating Lionel Messi coming to play, moving to bigger venues, and then he being out injured or, you know, not being available for whatever reason has created some problems for some of these teams. So I'm sure a safe bet, but interesting nonetheless to see it already happening and people already going public about it.
Yeah. Interesting that one of those comparisons there in terms of placing that broadcast in the pantheon of sports broadcast numbers puts it at bigger than every Masters final round going back to Tiger's 2001 round. We are in the Masters week now, one of the best sports biz weeks of the year, and I just wanted to look ahead a little bit to the Masters and talk about or just reinforce for our listeners what makes the Masters such a unique and actually extraordinary event. It's shrouded in mystery in terms of it's the nuts and bolts of it. Everybody knows what the Masters is, a beautiful kind of tournament in Augusta. But I remember, again, back in the sports pro days, we used to go to Sportel Monaco, and the guys from the Augusta National, from the Masters, would also be there on the ground selling their TV rights. And they actually make a fairly significant amount of money from international broadcast rights deals. There's a chap called Lee Bennett III. Don't know if you remember him, but lovely guy. We'd always have a little cocktail with him one night at Sportel. But he absolutely refused to talk about business in any way with me as a journalist. Like, no way was he ever going to accept my invitation to kind of sit down and have a proper meeting and maybe even record an interview. Absolutely no way. And actually, whenever the conversation informally veered towards how you do things at Augusta, he just shut down. It was amazing. They have a kind of zero tolerance approach to kind of spilling the beans about how they do what they do. And what they do is pretty extraordinary. There's a, I know you and I both follow Sebastian Odu, a big golf fan, former Canal Plus digital guy. He is a golf commentator as well. But he this week pointed to a really interesting Substack from a guy called Alessandro Ui. He calls it the AO. And this chap, Alessandro, has gone into the business of the Masters to basically show that the organization is leaving about $300 million on the table in terms of how it exploits all the traditional revenue streams. And it can do that because it is private, and that's absolutely its prerogative. And when it sits at the center of kind of US, the US sporting consciousness, that's extraordinary, right, that it does that. So just looking through the revenue, it makes around, estimates suggest that the 2022 Masters made around $151 million. That's $25 million from TV rights, $10 million from sponsorship, $69 million from merchandising. I would say that's the only one that is kind of good versus other golf tournaments. $39 million from ticket sales, $8 million from concessions. We always see the photos of the drastically underpriced sandwiches that go around every year. It's amazing that they've been able to continue with this policy of kind of selling low, not commercializing, and retaining control of look, feel, broadcast, everything.
Well, it extends to the broadcast, of course. There's always a lot of frustration. I think less so now as they've gently relaxed some of the rules, but traditionally there was this very narrow broadcast window for full, what they called full live coverage from the course. And at one stage, it was sort of almost the last sort of 2-3 hours of play every day. I notice in the UK that Sky's coverage this year begins at sort of 2 p.m. UK time. So early morning in Augusta, and they're able to show featured groups and certain holes until the point at which full live coverage begins. But it's all part of the, as you say, the private club mentality, the mystique, the fug almost around the whole event. The other thing that, just thinking about the Masters and how it sort of seeps into consciousness, and something that obviously isn't done in an official way, but I do think is part of the way that more and more people experience the event. It's a big betting week. And that's obviously not something that happens through the sort of, you know, official Augusta channels. I'm sure it's something that they would necessarily countenance. But, you know, who are your picks? You know, what the sort of the betting odds look like is definitely a big point of conversation. The route through which many people experience and engage with the Masters,
yeah,
more so than any other golf event.
Yeah, just going back to this Substack that reinforces some of the quirky commercial decisions that get made. They give their domestic rights away for free. Well, they don't give them. You know, they don't charge a rights fee. They go to ESPN and CBS in exchange for total broadcast control, which means that they then limit ads to 4 minutes per hour. So from a US audience perspective, it must be a completely different and unique experience, almost like watching sport on the BBC.
Indeed. And it's interesting because I actually watched a bit of the LIV Golf this week live on their YouTube channel from Miami. And you can argue, and we can have a discussion about the sporting merit of LIV Golf and all the issues surrounding that, and, you know, what it all means in terms of prestige versus more established golf tours, golf events. But I have to say, the actual coverage, the production, is very, very high.
Mm.
It's an very dynamic broadcast. It doesn't look, it has a pace to it that a lot of other traditional golf broadcasts don't. And it's really, really good. Good use of graphics. I think they've really tidied those up and made those a lot more accessible to new viewers compared to certainly the first year when I think we maybe had a conversation about it on the podcast. They use sound incredibly well. They're able to sort of mic up players, provide a lot of atmosphere from around the course. It's really good. And I think it will be an interesting juxtaposition with what we see served up from Augusta this weekend. It is worth saying, of course, that Augusta National, the Masters, has an incredibly, I would say, forward-thinking, cutting-edge approach to technology, despite being a very traditional event. And they, like Wimbledon, they've managed to get the balance between tradition and modernity, yeah, just about perfectly right.
It's Will Steger, who's principally responsible for everything that you were watching on YouTube when you were watching LIV Golf there. He's the chief media officer at LIV and, by all accounts, is doing a fantastic job over there. Yeah, a couple of things that you're guaranteed to see this week at Augusta on your social streams. A lot of pictures of the price boards for sandwiches, the pimento cheese, etc. You're going to get some nonsense from the clubhouse about the champion's dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever's on the menu from last year's champion gets to choose the menu. There's all these traditions. That's what we love. And to your point, David, about technology, you will get some industry observers talking about why the Augusta Masters app is the best in the biz, 100% guaranteed. I'd like to see a different viewpoint for once, to be honest, but can't be the best every year, can it? You're just trotting out the same old content that someone else had last year.
Well, maybe it can.
Maybe it can.
Right, that's the Masters.
You talked about YouTube, actually. The last time I watched any sport on YouTube was when I went to World Congress in, I'm going to say, 2018, maybe 2017, out in Dana Point and LA. And there was an Arsenal game on, and I couldn't watch it anywhere. So I bought some kind of license on YouTube to watch it there. Watched it, absolutely fine. I think it was a very boring 0-0 draw with Everton. But ever since then, when I log on to Google and YouTube here in the UK, it thinks that I'm based in the US, so I can't get my UK content. Warning, do not try to get a YouTube subscription where you're not living.
Got it. I have been watching a little bit of YouTube.
Goes under the radar. Biggest broadcaster in global sport, potentially?
Certainly the biggest platform, and I think one that we probably don't talk about enough. I think there are others who talk themselves up a lot more than YouTube, but it's really interesting. You know, you can click on the sort of on the live button now on YouTube and get...
Where are you watching? On your phone? On your TV?
TV.
Okay.
Well, sometimes on my phone, but sometimes on TV in the small, in the, you know, tiny moments where I have access to my own TV.
Yeah.
But it's really easy. And actually, in terms of live sport, was able to dip into the LIV Golf. Sky are putting a lot of, I suppose, what you would maybe call second-tier challenger sport live on its YouTube channel. So you could watch this weekend in the UK, at least, British Basketball League, Netball Super League, a Bundesliga game. You can watch, I know, the J-League. If you get up early enough in the morning, the J-League will show a game for international viewers.
I'm up for the sumo anyway, so...
Of course you are. There's a lot out there, and it's really, as I say, a platform, if not a broadcaster, that we don't really talk about. Doesn't spend, in the grand scheme of things, money on a host of different rights. It has the Sunday Ticket package for the NFL, for which it has paid billions of dollars. That began this season, or this season just gone. But there are some really interesting statistics about YouTube and what's happening there. So according to Nielsen, YouTube is the number one streaming platform by watch time and has been now for every month for a full year. So 12 consecutive months of people watching it more than any other streaming platform. It's also the most watched streaming service, to your point, on TV. It's really easy with a, you know, any sort of smart TV to find YouTube from a discovery point of view in terms of sort of user experience. I think probably only Netflix can compete with it, but it's...
Well, from a discovery... Well, this is why I'm interested in YouTube, actually, from a sports perspective. You say from a discovery point of view, it's very easy. Do you mean finding the app on your TV or phone, or do you mean once you're in it, navigating to what you might like to watch?
Both.
Right, because...
Easy to spot and easy to search within.
Okay.
Now increasingly categorized and by channel, and you can obviously personalize it to your taste,
because,
and subscribe to whatever you want.
Because this is my issue with Netflix's foray into live sports. They haven't made discoverability easy for the live sports bits and pieces that they've done. I was aware that they were going on, but I wouldn't have known it from opening Netflix. YouTube, so they basically didn't make the most of their discoverability features and their homepage. YouTube has the potential to put stuff on its homepage and point people towards it. It knows so many things about everyone that uses YouTube because of the Google ad platform and all the data that it collects on us all the time. So as a marketing platform for more traditional broadcasters to get people onto their own platform, YouTube's almost second to none. You know, provide a bit of a tease, a bit of a, here you go, let's go to the main platform. And that's, like, Instagram is like this as well.
Yeah, right? That's use case one. Use case two for the sports industry is for mostly challenger rights holders not able to do deals in specific markets for whatever reason, to put their content on, and they make it a reach play rather than a replay.
But that's just racking up the numbers, right? That's just to say that you can, you know, you've gone to, let's say, 4,000 people.
But it's a tactic, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah. Did you see this thing about the British Touring Car Championships going to, being broadcast live on TikTok?
Yes. So this is ITV's coverage in the
world
UK.
World first, apparently. ITV Sport farming out a bit of it. Well, live coverage of every single race of the British Touring Car Championships this year is going to be broadcast live on TikTok.
Globally.
Good luck to him, I say. That's it's innovation. It's, but why not? You've got something that probably in the grand scheme of things doesn't perform massively well for you in terms of numbers. Why not use something to experiment with something like that? Go for it.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. Go for it.
Yeah. David, we've got to wrap up very quickly, but do you want to outline your new plan for the Commonwealth Games? David Cushnan's rescue package for the Commonwealth Games.
So the Commonwealth Games...
You've been off putting this together.
Yeah, this is how I spent my Easter break.
Yeah.
So the Commonwealth Games is still looking for a 2026 venue. This, of course, after the state of Victoria pulled out last year at very short notice of its hosting rights. Commonwealth Games Federation has released a statement this week giving a bit of a status report. There wasn't a great deal of specific stuff in there about specific venues. We know that Singapore has recently said no, declined the opportunity. Malaysia has also declined the opportunity to host in 2026. But this statement from the Commonwealth Games Federation did talk about aiming to have a Games host by May, so really not too long, I mean next month. They want to do this ideally pre-Olympics, as Katie Sadler was explaining in an interview she did on the BBC yesterday, Monday. This is primarily about making sure athletes have certainty about what the international events calendar looks like post-Olympics for this next four-year cycle, of which the Commonwealth Games will be, hopefully, a key part. But there's clearly significant challenge logistically in terms of finding a host at this notice. There doesn't appear to be many, if any, hosts coming forward publicly. The Commonwealth Games Federation talking about a lot of private conversations are happening. My thought is there has to be pretty radical reform, and I think that is the Commonwealth Games Federation's view as well. Whatever happens in 2026 is going to be something of a compromised version of what the Games has been, but I think there has to be a total reset of all stakeholder expectations of what a major international multi-sport event is. So if you are an athlete, that might mean competing in front of not many people at all in not as salubrious facilities as you might expect for an international event. I think there is a case, if we are the point where we're all agreed that the Commonwealth Games has a future, and I know that's a point that is hotly debated, but if it does, it has to turn into part sports event. It almost has to be one third sports event, one third cultural extravaganza, you know, Eurovision contest style, whatever.
Yeah.
And then one third almost business, trade, mission, knowledge sharing, a place where almost deals are done. There has to be, I think, a total reset of what it does and can be for a Commonwealth movement that we all know is best severely challenged.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like a Commonwealth fair.
A little bit like the old sort of World
Grand
Fair.
Grand Exhibition sort of.
A bit more expo than Olympics.
Well, very interesting, David. Very interesting.
Just a thought.
Yeah, let's put it to the decision makers. Perhaps at Sport Accord this week. Are you going?
No, I'm not.
No, me neither. Oh, well. Shall we draw a line under it there?
I think that would be best.
Okay. See you all next week.
Goodbye.